everybody. Welcome to this week's podcast. And I'm always joined by my co-host, Eric. I have just arrived at one of the most epic resorts I've ever seen. Arriving and checking in, I was greeted by two butlers. And I've got two butlers on standby. One is massaging my feet while I'm doing this podcast right now. And one is, I'm just kidding, it's not. Eric, what's up, my man? How are you?
No. Tell us more about the butlers. Tell us more about it.
What's the other butler doing? They're two Russian butlers. One was on each foot.
Okay.
So, amazing. I mean, it's just like a huge golf resort. And yesterday I was in Riyadh and I worked with the company that ships all the oil for Saudi.
Mm.
Dude, something else, eh? They only made $8 billion last year, I think.
Shame.
I think that's what I heard. Shame. They're struggling. Things are tough there in Saudi. What's happening there, Eric?
Yeah, all good. It's been a weird week for me as well. I've done lots of traveling in and out of Cape Town, which I'm not usually doing. Like, it's either...
Where are you going?
Well, no, it's just been to clients, running workshops and like... But it's almost never that I'm traveling in and out of Cape Town. Like, most of the work that I end up doing is like, you know, Joburg or somewhere else.
Right.
It's very seldom that it's actually in Cape Town. So it's been kind of a weird week for me like that, in that I'm like driving to work, which I don't ever do driving to work.
Of course, as a house husband.
That's
20 minutes ago for you.
Yes.
That's but you know, I think Cape Town is very similar to Dubai in many ways, because a very small percentage of people actually make money in Dubai. You live in Dubai and then you make money globally. And in Cape Town, I think it's a very similar thing. You know, you live in Dubai, in Cape Town. There's some businesses making money, but I think most of the commerce comes out from outside of Cape Town. So,
I must say, I always love going into Cape Town. I love the vibe in there. I love the, I love going into these unassuming buildings where there's like one small door, and you go in, and all of a sudden it's just like everything is there. Robs, I think your mic is on.
So just let us tell everybody who Rob is. Rob is a brand new producer that we've brought on, Robin Durnford. And she's arrived, and today she's actually listening to the pod. And from next week, we're going to be having a totally different pod. And when Robin sent us the show breakdown, my response to Eric was, I feel like I'm an adult now all of a sudden. Yeah. Because the structure of the pod's going to be so, like, I don't know, world class in many ways. So we're very excited. And Robin also, you will start hearing from her on the pod. And she'll be coming in and joining us as she starts getting some momentum behind us. So welcome aboard, Robin. And I'm sure all the listeners will be getting to know you real soon.
So into the pod, dude. Let's talk about what today is. It's a bit of a, it's a version 2.0. And it's very apt for kind of where we're at. Recently, ChatGPT launched a new model that is, we spoke about it actually on the previous pod. And since then, I've just been seeing use case after use case, people showcasing and demoing especially like the voice function of this new ChatGPT. So it's gone from ChatGPT 4 to ChatGPT 4.0.
Omni.
And yeah, and so 4.0 is exactly that. It can reason and logic across text, video, and audio.
It's generative AI. That's what it is. It's generative AI. It's
generating full capacity. Yeah. And so
that's right. So it's generative AI. It started.
Mm. And like I've actually been loving using the voice function. It's quite cool having the conversation and like being able to carry that with ChatGPT. But previously we did an episode where we had ChatGPT ask us questions, interview us on the pod. And so today, now that we have a new model, we thought let's do another episode like that, and let's get ChatGPT to ask us some new questions. So new model, new questions. That's kind of where we're at. And we might revisit this as we go along until we get to ChatGPT 10 and until we are no longer relevant and don't have a voice anymore.
I was just about to say that, is that eventually it'll be AI asking AI some questions and we'll act like it's John and Eric and you won't know that you're the difference. But the truth is your AI will be listening to our podcast, because that's what's also going to be happening. You see the Bumble CEO saying the next version of Bumble is an AI version of you gets to meet the AI version of the possible potential date that you're going to go on. The AIs will talk and interact and realize whether you're actually suited with each other or not, and then pass you over to the actual human side.
It starts sounding a bit ridiculous, you know? Like, I think...
That's crazy. It's crazy.
Like, At some point, it becomes a parody of itself, I think. But yeah, so listen, let's dive into it. So I prompted ChatGPT. I have about 10 or 15 questions here. So some of them we'll get into and they'll go quickly, and some of them they might be a bit slower. I asked for a combination of serious questions and then fun and laid back questions. So today is the get to know Eric and John episode.
So hey, no, wait. Everybody knows John. Let's get to know Eric. Eric's going to tell us things today. Deep things.
Part of my prompting was no personal questions.
Anyway, let's go.
So serious questions first, and then we'll jump into the more fun and laid-back questions. So question number one, which is I think is just a very apt place to start, is what inspired you to start the Expansive podcast, and how has it evolved since its inception?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, you want to say it? You answer it?
Yeah, let me jump off, because this is we met in, because I remember seeing this picture not too long ago. We met in 2017 for the first time, and I remember I think initially we got along very well. I didn't think that you would become one of my best friends over time, but we got along very well. And then our relationship kind of evolved a bit. At some point, you tapped into me for a bit of coaching. Then we went from coaching to...
Well, I want to explain why. I was impressed with your determination and just watching you online, getting so focused in on what you were doing. And I remember thinking to myself back then, I want to surround myself with specialists. I think I'm a specialist. I want specialists around me. And I was just watching you, and you weren't marketing to me, but I thought I just enjoy your focus. And I reached out to you and said, look, well done. I love what you're doing. You got your master's in coaching. Why don't you coach me for a bit? And I also wanted to support your business. But then things didn't work out, bro.
Well,
what happened?
Well, no. I think what we realized was that we wanted to have a more two-way flowing conversation. Because coaching, all the focus is obviously on you, and you have so much focus on you already. And
yes.
We thought we need to
I wanted to share some of that.
Create
focus.
Some thinking partnerships. And so that's kind of what it evolved into, is that we would have conversations about business and about life, but more kind of two-way. And then I remember, and this is actually part of one of my keynotes, thinking that this would be great as a podcast. We come to the world from very different angles, even though we have very shared interests. But I sat on it for a while, because I was actually a bit nervous about asking you and thinking, well, what if he's I'm too busy for it. And then I look like the idiot, for reaching out a hand and then getting it slapped down. So I sat on it for a while. And then eventually one day I was like, well, what's the worst that can happen? If he says no, then, it doesn't happen, which is the same as what's happening right now. So I reached out and I said, listen, we should do a pod. And it was 2 minutes later that you came back and you were yes, great idea. We should do it. And that was it. And then we just started figuring it out.
I think you missed one little part. Is you did say once while we were in one of the conversations, you said, we should be recording these because I think there's really good information here. And you left it at that. I didn't relate that to a pod. But also I've been toying with starting a pod, but I didn't want to get into a pod where I was interviewing. I don't think I'm a great interviewer. I think that's not really where my skill lies. And pods were always about interviewing. And I think conversational pods weren't such a thing. I think
no, it wasn't.
We were actually early in the conversational pod space. Yeah, it's not a thing. And in fact, a lot of our peers right now love the fact that we have this conversational thing going. And I think we didn't even know what we were going to do. We had no clue, dude. We were just there was no clue. There was no plan, really. It was let's just put something out and see what happens. And I was sitting in Copenhagen. And when you messaged me, he's like, do you know we're number one in South Africa? I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, it was such a big surprise.
What are you talking about? And we went to number one straight away. Yeah, it was such a big surprise. And in fact, the whole thing has been a surprise,
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, one of the core things that we said to each other right up front was, we'll do this until it's no longer fun. And that was actually always the metric. Even though we've been over time, we've focused on the number of downloads and, we obviously want the pod to be a success. And even now, as we've evolved over time, and now we have Robin involved as well, and we've had multiple people involved over time, of course we want it to be a commercial success. But I think the metric that we've always tracked up front was, we do it because we love it and we enjoy it. And if it's no longer that, then we shouldn't be doing it, because it'll also translate into what people hear, And it's amazing to me that 210 episodes in, like, it feels like we're just starting again, you know, like today as we're on the session, I'm like, we're just getting going. It really does.
I think we've had energy fluctuations
over time, which is a natural thing that'll occur. But it feels like we just keep tapping into a higher and higher and higher level. We might drop down a bit, but it keeps elevating. Second question. So this is slightly, just answer it. What personal experiences have most shaped your approach to leadership?
Bankruptcy. Without a doubt. Mm. When I ran, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I remember, look, I was actually with a very good friend of mine, Pepe, who him and I used to have preemies back in the day when we were running restaurants. And we're talking to each other. We were like pipsqueaks, dude. We're like 25 years old, 26 years old. I had three restaurants. I had like 300 staff. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. My payroll a month was like hundreds of thousands of rands. I don't think I could do that right now. Mm. And being 25, 26, what do you know about leadership? I made so many mistakes. I was so rude. I was so impatient. I did the best I could, but my leadership style was very much a force. It wasn't a coerce. Like I was definitely a transactional leader. You know, I wasn't a transformational leader whatsoever. And I often joke, you know, the biggest and most dangerous mix in the world is high levels of testosterone and money. And I had a lot of money and I was very young and I just thought I was invincible, you know. And my leadership became just to the point of, I think I was bored and unfulfilled. And so I was irritable in my success, which is so weird. But I remember I was irritable because I was just young and I wanted more. And I was just ambitious. And when it all came tumbling down, it was very personal. Like everything I'd worked at for incredibly hard for so long were taken away from me overnight. And I went from a beautiful home and a beautiful car to no car, no home, friend staying at a friend's second bedroom. I changed my name to Carlos because I had no car.
So bad.
It really affected my leadership. And I think today I'm just a lot more empathetic and a lot more patient, both because of that experience, but also because I think you're just getting older, you know? But yeah, definitely bankruptcy.
Yeah. And how would you describe your leadership today? Would you say that today you obviously feel like you're a more transformational leader, but how would you describe that as a style for you?
You're a lot more empathetic towards my teams, a team of people that I work with and the partners I have. I also, you know what I also think is really important as a leader is to know what you're good at.
Mm.
And I think when you get forced to do things you don't like, you become terrible. You're just not happy.
Yeah.
And so with all my partners and my businesses and all my people that work with me and my brand, I know exactly what I'm good at. And I've told them, look, this is what I want to do. You do everything else. I'm paying you for doing this. And what happens is there's clarity of communication. And the only way you can really measure this is the length of time your people are with you and the growth that you're having. Because if you have high turnover of people, it means that you're not achieving this. But if you've got a low turnover and you're growing the business, it means that there's cohesive energy. And also, you know, the fish rots from the head. It's the tone of the business is my tone. And so it's a very, I'm very proud of it because before I arrive at a session and Shams, if you're listening to this, my left brain and business manager, people love Shams. Like she's on it. She sets it up. I mean, that's such a wonderful approach to almost like stepping up the excellence. And she does that. She really steps it up in the way she represents the brand and everybody else as well. So yeah, I think it's become a lot more empathetic, a lot more patient, a lot more loving.
And it's also
just more fun. Or, except with you, you know, like you, I like to mock, but everybody else I'm good with, bro. Sorry, mom. I know, mom's upset. Mom, don't worry.
I made a video yesterday about this, that, you know, if you're a leader that wants to know it all in today's day and age, you're going to suffer. And you have to be the kind of leader that brings people who have their specialities and bring them together. And you are the coordinator almost of this like network of specialists. And that's what you need to be good at, is you need to be good at extracting the best from these people. And I don't mean like in a squeeze them dry kind of way. I mean like in an inspiration, like
not manipulative
way. Bring the best out of them.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, I like that video, actually. Thank it's
you.
Very good.
Thank you.
I watched that video. I liked it on
TikTok. Yeah, you were one of the four that, okay. that liked it.
What about you?
Look,
it's so funny. I wasn't going to say anything. I can't believe you brought it up. I wasn't going to say anything. I was like, I think I was number three. And number one is your wife. Number two is your mom.
My wife is not on TikTok.
And I think Atlas, he was number four. Atlas, your dog, was number four because he loved you so much.
For me, I think there are a few things that have shaped my leadership style. The first is, you know, I think often when you become a leader, you are, and I think this is probably most cases, is that you are kind of put into a position where you have to be a leader and you never really signed up for it. And I remember when I started Betterman, you know, initially it was like, I want to just share my vision of go to bed at night a better man than when you woke up in the morning. I just wanted to share that with the world and like my document, my journey of it. And then all of a sudden there were 18,000 men looking to me as the leader of this community. And it, like, it came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden I had this responsibility to bear. But what I realized is the way that I actually led that community very successfully was that it was always that my stance was, we'll figure it out together. My stance was never, here's the answer. My stance was always...
Yeah, you don't have a condescending stance.
Yeah, it's like, how do we go about figuring this out? So it's almost very naturally a coaching stance. And then I remember, so coming out of Betterman, obviously, like, I started getting more and more into the corporate space. And, you know, what we've built thought leadership practices. And I remember initially... to build a thought leadership practice for me was quite daunting because I was like, who am I to share my ideas with the world and present them as anything that is remarkable or meaningful? But then I had this like switch that happened in my head, which was, you're not coming here as the leader, you're coming here as someone who is sharing their journey. And again, it just became like, I'm not trying to show you this is the way. I'm just saying, like, this is the way that I'm going. Maybe you learn something from it. And so again, it was like, it's very collaborative in nature. And then finally, like, the final piece is then both of those kind of approaches led me to working with a lot of leadership teams. And since those days, I mean, now it's been, sure, many, many, many teams that I've worked with. And
look at top leaders around the
world.
Yeah,
and it's been incredible I always think this is one of the privileges we have with the work that we do. Is that we don't just get to see one or two leaders in a one specific company and how they do things. We get to see across industries, across different companies, in different cultures, and in different countries. It's so amazing to be able to see into their worlds and to learn from them. And so that's ultimately also been a very big thing. Like, I've met such incredible leaders who deal with so many pressures and responsibilities, things that I'm not.
Let me tell you, I don't want to be a corporate leader at all. Jeez, that's hard, dude.
Can you imagine?
That is a hard job.
Yeah, wow. No, it's incredible.
Hats off to all of you.
So, I think it's always been learning and collaborative. I feel like I'm that today still, and it's kind of just part of my makeup, my leadership DNA.
But I also think your nature is always like that. Your nature is like that already. You know, you are calm and relaxed, and so. I think you've actually stepped into your power a lot more, celebrating your nature and making it actually a very powerful thing for you, you know, in the way you bring across your message. And I know sometimes when we speak offline, the way you ask me questions, it's like, I know exactly. It's a very warm and engaging space, holding space. And excellent.
Thank you for that.
So well done. Pretty much your panel. But let's keep moving.
I thought, might we get away? It's like,
I can't help myself.
All right, one more serious question, then we have a bit of rapid fire, sort of easier questions. How do you stay motivated and inspired in your professional and personal life during tough times?
I think what you have to do is redefine tough times. And I think that when you think you're in tough times, your ability to deal with them become much harder. And what I've started practicing is something like, and it's happened a few times recently, somebody said something to me and I've thought about it and I thought, that's actually not true about me. I know myself. And I don't own it. It doesn't stick to me. And when it doesn't stick to me, I promise you, it just fades out of my life. Whatever that, like, it just, it disappears. It dissolves. And so I think we must be careful in saying tough times, because tough times say I've held on to a story that I'm not able to let go of because I'm owning it, or I'm thinking I need punishment, or there's attachments to thinking you're in a tough style. But, you know, I meditated. I flew from Riyadh this morning. I had a wake-up call at 2:30 a.m. How luxurious and glamorous is our business, Eric? Anyway, so I've been traveling from Riyadh the whole day, and I did a meditation, an hour meditation called from Dr. Joe called Potential. I've sent it to you. What's it called? Anyway, something about potentials, new potentials. And oh my God, it totally changed my my energy, totally. And I was like, my God, I I've been so busy recently. I really haven't been meditating, and I just did this one and it totally shifted my energy. So the answer is this for me: meditate more often, because you change your state and your awareness. Two, stop thinking you're in tough times. Tough times is what you perpetuate. And if you keep saying you're in tough times, then you are in tough times, and then you've lost before you left home.
Yeah, I like that. If I had to add to that, you know, when I think of tough times, obviously the thing that always comes front and center for me is that when you're in tough times, it means there's a challenge or a threat in front of you that you're not dealing with effectively. And so you need to be a threat to the threat. And all that really means for me is that you become good at being adaptable and not being resilient. Because if you're resilient, those tough times, they stay around, you know, because... Mm. And
you want them to be.
Well, even if you don't want them to be, it's just like your approach to it is that I'll take the knock.
No. Subconsciously, you're looking for reasons to continuously be resilient in tough times. Like, you're creating that need to be resilient because of it's a symbiosis.
I hear you. Yeah.
Anyway,
I hear you. And resilience doesn't move you forward. That's ultimately the big problem. It's like, you know, whenever you think of like if the rally call is resilience, then it feels to me like we aren't thinking about ways to deal with the challenge in front of us. We are just okay to endure. And so the rally call of like be a threat to the threat for me has just become, well, if there are tough times, it means there's something in front of you that you need to change. So how do you become more adaptable? How do you recalibrate how you think, feel, and act? And if I can figure that out, then the tough times become my teacher.
Exactly, because what you're doing is you've actually created those tough times. So then you have to, like, what do I always say about Dr. Joe Dispenza retreats? People arrive in wheelchairs and walk out. People arrive blind and see when they leave. And people are like, are you mad? I'm like, the only thing they did is stop being themselves for a week. They meditated for 4 to 12 hours a day. And then because they stopped being themselves, the disease fixed themselves. And so your tough times is created by your personality, which creates your personal reality. So your personality has to change. And the way you do that is by changing your awareness, which means tough times are created by you, which means they can be uncreated by you. So yes, it's your responsibility. Can't get caught up in that. Nice. I like it.
All right. Some quick fire questions. And these are the more fun and laid back questions. So number one, if you could invite any two people, dead or alive, to be guests on the podcast, who would you choose and why?
Obama and Nelson Mandela.
Interesting. Two presidents.
I love them. Both of them. You know why? Both of them led with heart. Yes, of course, politics is dirty always. And there's always stories about both of them. But they moved people. They moved people. Like no other leader ever moved anybody. I've never cried when I listened to a president. When Obama spoke, I was in tears. I was like, what? How did this happen? Who's this person? Where did he flipping come from? And even now I feel emotional about it. And then Madiba, my God, the shit Madiba had to put up with, those racist bastards and what they did to them and their people. And for him to get over that, my God, he's a saint, bro. Like, how do you come out of 27 years of torture and pain and be like, no problem, guys, let's go. Are you joking? For 3 days in a row, somebody's pissing me off. I'm planning the execution in my head. Mandiba's coming out after 27 years. No problem. Let's go. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. I think I have to agree with you on Obama. Like I'm not a fanboy much, you know, I don't typically have that sort of like, I don't really have it. And, apart from like his personality and the care and the depth that you've just spoken about, he's also just one of the best orators of our time.
Jeez, dude.
You know, you can listen to him speak and speak and speak and speak.
Next level.
He's incredible.
Next level.
I think if I had to invite someone, there's a name that keeps popping into my head, which is C.S. Lewis.
Yes.
And like Wow. And I think
That's power.
It's a weird name that pops into my head. But yeah, I remember I went through a C.S. Lewis phase, and his writing also comes from such a place of such substance. And he had this one audiobook, The Screwtape Letters, which was like a conversation with a demon. It was like something around that. And I just remember listening to it and thinking, I'd love to be able to think like him, and I'd love to be able to write like him. But apart from that, there's also, you know, there's something about, it's not necessarily a maturity thing, but there's a depth, you know, like it's when depth. You speak to someone, yeah.
No, I use one of his quotes in my talk, is I sat with my anger long enough until she told me her name was grief.
How beautiful.
I mean, it's deep, bro. That's my third slide.
Good.
And when I say that slide, the whole audience is like, ooh.
Yeah, that's so good.
That's so good, bro. C.S. Lewis, what a champ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How amazing that slide features in the slide deck of a futurist.
Exactly. But because if you're carrying emotions you haven't processed, you can't engage with the future in an optimistic way. It's like, it's so obvious. Your memories are holding you back from preparing for the future. You don't even know they're holding you back. They're just holding you back, and you think it's normal. It's not normal.
I also use them in one of my slide decks where, and I told the story before, you know, it was C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien and some other dude, like a third dude. They formed a little sort of writing club. And then eventually, like, so they would meet and they would talk about their writing. They talk about life. And, you know, there was just like three good friends getting together. And eventually the one guy passed away, and C.S. Lewis noted that J.R. Tolkien stopped laughing in a very specific way. He's like, whenever this guy that passed away, whenever he told a joke, J.R. Tolkien would laugh in a very specific way. And then he wrote down that in each of my friends, there's something that only some other friend can bring out. I need someone else than my own to help them shine their light. And so when I use it, it's obviously in the context of people bring out different parts of us. Like, we have all this potential, but that potential is only unlocked by the people around us. But he has such a way of wording things. All right. So on to the next. I would second Obama for that. Like,
Obama. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you did second Obama.
I would second Obama. Got it. So okay. If anyone knows Obama, please put us in touch with him. You can reach us.
Robin, we'd love to have him on the pod next week. Yeah, your first
Obama.
I wouldn't even know what to say to Obama, dude. I'd get too nervous. I'd be like, no, I don't want him yet. That's mine.
All right. What's one quirky or unexpected hobby or interest that you have that most people wouldn't guess about you? Nothing freaky, nothing weird.
The reason you don't know about it is exactly the reason you don't know about it, Eric. Why would I want to bring that list here into the public, Eric? Quirky. I'll tell you something quirky. I don't know why, but I absolutely love toiletries. Like, you must see my cupboard in Dubai and in Cape Town. Dude, I've got so many toiletries, bro. I don't know why. I love different skincare creams, aftershaves, hair gel. Like, I'm always experimenting with things. So, but now I find a brand. It's called Minimalist, and it's from England or India. I don't know. I bought it in Dubai. A great range of products, and it's called Minimalist. So, one of my quirks is I spend far too much money on toiletries for some odd reason. And so, anyway, that's a quirk.
That is very unexpected. I know what to get you for your birthday, so thank you. Thank you for
Please
that.
Please don't. I've got enough. I've got enough.
Well, it seems like you could always have some more.
No. Please don't.
So, an unexpected hobby of mine is I collect knives.
I know that. Yeah. Yes, that's it. Yeah, I know. I've got your knife, actually.
Yeah, I have a thing about it. I always have a knife on me, and it's been a thing for a while. And then what, so it became a thing because I love the mastery of it, you know, and I don't just like, I don't like knives just for the sake of it. I like it because, especially in South Africa and especially in the Western Cape, there's a whole culture around it in that we have these amazing bladesmiths that create incredible pieces of work. And a lot of these knives, you like, if you want to buy one, it's going to cost you between $1,000 and $5,000. Like, and that's for a like a pocket knife.
I mean, I've seen the documentary on Japanese samurai swords and like the extent they go to with those things and how many they melt them and I mean, geez, it is a proper art.
Like it's complete mastery. And so there's a few knives that I've like earmarked that I want to buy over time from very specific knife makers. But another thing, and this is for all my, you know, our fellow dog lovers, is if you're walking with your pup, you should always have a knife on you. And one of the big reasons is because it's actually very easy for them to get their collars twisted and they can choke, they can be suffocated because of it. I've heard from three people by now that have had that happen to them. And even though they were present, they couldn't get the collars off. Like it got twisted to the extent where they couldn't do anything about it. But if you have a knife with you, you can always cut that collar off. So I never go to the park without a collar, without a knife.
Without a collar. That's your other quirk.
My other quirk.
Let's talk about that other quirk where Dan, your wife, pulls you at the park with a collar on your neck.
Two collars for the dogs and all the rest are mine. So
one collar for Eric. Yes, that's right. But Eric, do you think you've been carrying that knife because you come from the Oostrand of Joburg, East Rand?
No.
And in East Rand, everybody had a knife. Hey, like how you grew up in the primary school.
Maybe it's a very deep psychological thing that's happening. I don't know.
I love it. But you are into mastery. It's always been a fascination of mine, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. I think let's do two more questions and then we can call it. So if you could have any superpower, what would it be? And how would you use it in your daily life?
I thought this is from Omni, bro. What questions are these? These are like chatty space questions.
She obviously assessed all of the expanse of history and realized that question has never been asked of John Sarnay. So now she needs to know.
I tell you what I want to do. I tell you exactly what I want. I want the powers from Limitless.
The brain dude. Like the movie. Sharpness.
You can access more of your brain and formulate more ideas and connect more dots than anybody else. You elevate.
It's so boring. Like you wouldn't want to fly.
Strategic. Yeah, fly. But I want to
be invisible.
I want to be undercover.
You want to be smart.
No. I want to be invisible. You want to think better than everybody else, and so you can manage more people and move more people and inspire more people. If you're invisible or fly,
I think we need to work on your superpower. No. This is not good.
Limitless. Limitless. What's yours?
Definitely like dissipation, like traveling.
Disappearing.
Distances. Yeah, not disappearing, but like being able to cover distances.
I like that.
You know? There's also a movie about appear here, reappear, appear here, right?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's nice. Star Trek. Beam me up, Scotty. Yeah.
No, man, there's a movie where the guys are able to do this. Like they look at a picture and like you can jump into that picture.
I've seen that movie. It's called Jumper. That's right. I know it.
That's the one. Because
I like that superpower.
Wouldn't you love that? Because you wouldn't have been woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning. You could have just jumped there 5 minutes before.
You're right. But you understand. Listen. I'll be so smart. I'll talk you out of your superpower to give it to me. So I'll be managing you in your brain without you even realizing I'm doing it.
It's the worst superpower I've ever heard of, but it's fine. All right.
Look, to be honest with you, I've watched the movie Limitless more than I've watched any other movie, I think. I've absolutely loved that movie. NTZ, bro. Bring it on right now. Anybody listening to this can get NTZ. Get hold of us.
So what is the most memorable or unusual experience you've had while recording an episode of the Expansive Podcast?
These two butlers on my feet right now.
Can I?
No, the two. Sarah, stop it, man. I'm trying to focus. My favorite.
Mind of a millennial caught in the body of a boomer.
Yeah, but then you're dissing me. What's that? That's not a... Are you asking about the biggest mock? Are you talking about the biggest mock? Oh my God, I've got a million of them.
Memorable moment. Because your face.
That was your best chirp.
Dude, your face on that day was just the best.
But you know why? I think I got insecurities around my body. And sometimes when I eat too much, and you said that, I think I was most probably going through like a bit of an insecure phase. And you said that, I was like, bastard. He's like actually reading my mind. That's what I thought. You know what I mean? I was like, shit. Oh my God. I need to lose weight. that's funny. Yeah, that was a very good chirp. In fact, Jo in Dubai also brought it up and she loved it as well. Well done. That's you got back. That one got me back for like six
it's
of
like
my
dropping
chirps.
A nuke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a big bomb. That was a big bomb. My favorite pod ever. I think what was the question?
Most memorable moment on the pod.
Bro, was when we said goodbye to Axel.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel emotional now about it. That was, for me, I love that so much. He was with us and I remember him on the pod, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, that was good. Okay, now I have to do another question just so we can end on a... all right, so one last question and then let's jump off. So what is your favorite way to unwind after a long day of work?
That's... Oh, come on, that's obvious.
yeah, or to me.
It's obvious to me, not to the listeners of the pod. Okay, cheers. That was a great episode. Thank you so much for joining us. To be honest, to be honest. And I say this actually a lot, is walking. I have to walk, bro. I can't be in Dubai when it's too hot. I have to walk. If I can't walk, I feel frustrated when I can't walk, you know? And I just love walking. I love walking. And even now, I asked you to get onto the pod early so that I could go to the gym and I could go for a walk. It's like, I want to get that out the way because I got sound check at 7 o'clock. So I wanted to get the pod out the way. So yes, walking for me, yeah, as I'm getting older, it becomes more and more important for me, you know. And then I've watched documentaries. And when I say documentaries, I mean deep, insightful TikToks about how the brain shifts. As you're walking, they've got a brain scan. It's showing you how your brain's literally becoming more adaptable. Why? Because it moves into a high alpha state. It gets out of beta, moves into alpha state, and your brain at an alpha state is very adaptable. That's why listening to a podcast when you're walking is the best way to listen to a podcast, because your brain is relaxed taking that information in. I imagine driving to a certain extent might be similar if you're very relaxed on a highway, because you've got your sort of subconscious driving. You're not really actively driving. In walking's kind of the same. Your brain's doing two things. You're moving. Obviously, your blood's flowing differently. But I also think when I'm driving, I can listen to pods very, very intently because I've got two things happening in my brain. But ultimately, I think walking and if you look at the blue zones where the people live up until past 100, the thing they all have in common is light exercise every day.
Yeah. But also if you just go back in time and you look at so many of the like great thinkers have always had walking as a part of their daily routine. And I also have that with the pups every day at like 12 o'clock. And I think it's important that like you need to make time to listen to your pods while you're walking, but you also need to just not have anything because you also just need to be thinking and not have that stimulation. I unwind. So another hobby of mine, or maybe it's not as unexpected, but another thing that I really love is collecting high-end whiskies. And so, like, I love at the end of the day being able to pour a whiskey, not every day, but like on heavy days.
Ooh, that's and a then... slip. Ooh, wait. Let's just unpack that quickly. Every day. Like, what do you mean, every morning, Eric? Are we saying every morning?
It's always morning somewhere, right?
Yeah, it's always morning. That's true. It's always morning. It's always 5 p.m. somewhere. Okay. Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm very, very lucky that where I live, when I walk out onto the balcony, I overlook all of Somerset West. And it's just so great to have the space and like feel like I can breathe. And that to me is the best. So if I can do that, then I feel centered and I feel I can breathe. And if I can breathe, that's all good. Dude, listen, this was a fun episode. Thanks. That's all of the questions. I mean, ChatGPT has many, many more questions. They weren't
those are
as,
shit questions, bro. Shit.
Well,
questions.
I mean,
sorry.
I don't know.
Five out of ten.
Maybe
questions.
The next. Well, I'm not taking that personally.
Look,
I'll tell ChatGPT that.
From now on, Robin is going to do the questions. Like, that's it. Eric, handover. Eric, you're excellent at teamwork. You're excellent at being a husband and a dad of dogs. Everything else, you're average, bro. Average. Paddle,
I do not know. I'm getting blamed for ChatGPT.
You're an excellent friend and a good podcast co-host, but yeah, everything else.
Bad at ChatGPT prompts, is that what
bad.
You said?
Bad, like so bad. We're going to be running an AI course. I mean, I'm going to have to teach you some things before we get onto that
course.
Well,
listen, you're not doing the best job at promoting this at the moment. You know, I think you actually...
The course.
Of course.
You just showed us the questions you prompted. We're going to teach corporates about AI with those questions. Anyways, just kidding. That was a great one. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us again. Always wonderful to have you with us. We are incredibly excited for what we're doing with the pod next. We're so excited for Robin to be coming on board. And we're going to start really revving this engine up, and we're hoping that you're enjoying the pod even more. We have one big request from you, and the request is, can you send us any ideas of what you want us to talk about, or if you've heard other pods that you've enjoyed around a certain topic, to give us some ideas. I mean, we've got a lot of ideas, but we always love to hear what is it that you really want to hear about. And if we can get that sort of feedback, the more of it we can get, the better. And eventually, once we built the pod to a bigger pod, we'll start doing a proper Q&A session when we have more people asking more questions. And so we really got some exciting things ahead of us. And as I always say, in fact, I was with my friend last night, James Taylor in Saudi, another speaker. And I was saying to him, you know, James, I just can't be bothered to write another book. And he's like, John, me too. But also every time I finish writing a book, everything's changed. And so like, it keeps changing. So, you know, books are a slow format to get information out. And I truly believe that podcasts are the new books. And so we're putting a lot more effort in and realize that really the curation and culmination of the information that we require for our careers used to be put into a book in a slower format. But now with the help of Robin, we're really going to start to fast track our own learning. And that's really what happens when you finish a book, because you upgrade your own thinking and then add that value to the world. Podcasts are like the same, but think about it in timing formats, how things used to be a lot slower. Now they're a lot quicker. And really the uptake of information for us and to share it with the world really is helping us in many ways, and hopefully you. So if you can DM us on Instagram or make comments on the YouTube video to get us to think about any new things that you want us to talk about, please do that. And until next time, Eric, any closing words?
No, that was fun. Thanks a lot. See everyone next time.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Ciao.